You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you. Taking your calls, and the phone lines are open this morning, so you can get your call in now, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions, 57500. We wanted to start the 9 o'clock hour talking about ways to protect your evergreens in the winter, and more specifically, applying anti-desiccants. So, anti-desiccants, what are we talking about here, Ton? You get into these chemical things, and you know how I am. I just kind of,
well,
blah, blah, blah.
Over the years, I have seen, mainly in Wyoming and colder parts of Colorado, that nurseries will oftentimes require to maintain your tree warranty that during the winter you put on your pines and spruce what's called an anti-desiccant. And these are products that will prevent or slow evaporation from the needles, or if you spray them on deciduous trees when they have leaves on, it prevents water from evaporating from the leaves or needles. The theory is during the winter that because areas, you know, like Cheyenne and Laramie are just very windy and cold during the winter, that if you can help the pine and spruce not lose so much water, that they will not brown out as much because they can't, because the ground freezes and it's very difficult for them to uptake more water when the ground is frozen. And so it's used as a preventative to keep the trees from scorching over the winter. But the research on anti-desiccants is all over the place. Now, on the pines and spruce in the winter, there's probably more of a you've done no harm to you may have helped some. But when you're using anti-desiccants on other trees, especially during the summer, they can actually be detrimental because if you clog all the pores, which are called stomata, on the leaves, that's how a tree or a plant regulates its temperature. By evaporating water, it's just like a swamp cooler. It cools itself through evaporation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you clog these pores up with an anti-desiccant, yes, you're preventing it from losing water, but the plant can't cool itself. And so it's really common for plants that have had anti-desiccants sprayed on them during the summer to actually scorch and wilt down because they got too hot.
So when should somebody use this? And
if you're going to use them, it would be that you're extremely windy. So maybe at the mouths of the canyons, you know, Weber Canyon, Immigration Canyon, some of these where you have strong winds in the morning and evening. Higher mountain valleys that are windy. You know, I mentioned places like Cheyenne and Laramie. You know, University of Wyoming actually has underground tunnels for the students to get places because it's so cold. Places like that, maybe. But along the Wasatch Front, we don't generally need such products. You know, if you're transporting trees, especially in the winter, it wouldn't hurt. You know, if you've got to go several hundred miles, you know, you've purchased trees into the Salt Lake City area and you're going down to Cedar or something, maybe, if you can't tarp them. But generally, we don't need them.
Okay. And if you're going to use them, not in the summer.
Not in the summer.
So when is it applied?
It is applied sometime in November through early December. The temperatures need to be between 40 and 50 degrees for them to actually get on the trees and do their job. And so then they will last for, you know, several weeks, and you don't want to reapply them because you want them to wear off by spring.
Okay. And does the age of the tree matter?
It doesn't really. I think younger trees that don't have really established roots would be better protected, because older trees have such extensive root systems that they can sometimes offset a little bit if it's a little drier or whatever it is, just because of the size of their root systems. And so it'd be newly planted trees that would benefit the most from them.
Okay, and we have put up a complete article on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. So if you have questions about whether you should use an anti-desiccant or not, or how to protect your evergreens in the winter, there is a whole article on that.
There is. And the article I think we posted is by a doctor, a professor from the University of Washington named Linda Chalker Scott, who a good portion of her career has been correcting gardening fallacies and myths. It's almost like gardening Mythbusters. And she makes a lot of people mad that are in the horticulture industry, because she uses scientific evidence to debunk their long-held traditions. And she just tells it as it is. And there is no sugarcoating it with her, but she does a great job.
I like it.
And so I posted this article about anti-desiccants, and she'll just say some articles have said they're beneficial, some said no effect, and some said negative. And it's just a crapshoot on what you're doing. But the what I gleaned from her article, and just with my personal experience in horticulture, if you're going to be using these anti-desiccants, they're best used in windy areas where it's cold, maybe a bit dry, and you need to protect those newly planted pines and spruce.
All right. You can find that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Linda, we're coming to you next. You can text your questions to 57500.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jeff Kaplan from KSL News Radio. You want to receive the latest news, traffic, and weather all in one place? All you have to do is subscribe to the KSL text line. Text the word NEWS to 57500 and you'll get the latest news, traffic, and weather updates. Sometimes before we get them on the air. I'll catch you on the radio weekday afternoons on KSL News Radio.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse, especially the Saturday right before Christmas. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, and you can text us at 57500. We're also asking this morning if you have some ideas of topics that you would like covered in the new year. Send us a text. Tell us what you would like to hear about in the month of January. Linda is on the line in Riverton, and good morning, Linda. What was your question this morning?
Good morning. I purchased a Christmas cactus last year, and it was blooming, and it bloomed clear till probably the end of January, February. So I just left it in the same place. It just doesn't have direct light, low light. Watered it only when it dried out, and then it started to bloom, and I was so excited. It got about 10 blossoms on it, and they lasted maybe a week and a half, and they've all fallen off. Then a friend sent me a one for Christmas, and it came. It looks like it's going to be blooming. It has few blooms on it. It's a lot smaller, but it said on there to quit watering it after it bloomed and not water again until like May.
Wrong. Oh.
So I don't know what I did. I thought it was going to, my other one was going to bloom beautiful, and it didn't.
No, that's kind of ludicrous for these. These, even though they're cactus or cacti, they're not drought hardy. They're native to tropical rainforest up in the canopy, and they're used to being in those tropical rainforests. They get moisture almost daily. Now, that doesn't mean you should do that, but they are just not desert plants. And so the blooming problem, it could be that they're not getting cold enough. They really need to be near a cold, drafty window during the winter. And temperatures below 50, between 50 and 55 for several weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, are what actually causes the flower buds to form. And then you turn them 180 degrees and you can keep that up. And so it may be that they're not getting cold enough at night. And they do like bright indirect sunlight. So off to the side of window or an east window or something, they seem to do well in those.
Well, that's kind of where I have it. I have a square window, and my window, one faces north and one faces, let's see, west. And it's right there in my kitchen, and they don't get direct sunlight, and I thought it was pretty cool on that window. Do they need less light?
It's the other thing that causes them to bloom includes darkness. And so if they get at least 14 hours of darkness at night, maybe even 16, so you'd have to have them in a room near a bright window that you never turn the light on after 6 or 7 o'clock at night. And that will also cause them to bloom. And growers of these can manipulate that sort of stuff fairly easily. But as you as a homeowner, it's really hard. And so the cooler temperatures, and so maybe scooching them a little closer to the window. You don't want the actual cactus pads or the little leaves touching the window directly, but maybe scooching them a bit closer might cause them to bloom more often. But because they're producing those flowers right now, using a half-strength plant fertilizer in the winter, because it costs them a lot of energy to make those flowers, actually helps them out quite a bit.
Just a regular household or regular fertilizer for
yes.
plants?
Yep. Okay. And just half strength. You don't need one that says Christmas cactus or anything like that. The plants don't know. And just a good half strength. So if it says mix it at 1 ounce per gallon, cut it back to a half ounce or 2 tablespoons, cut it back to 1 tablespoon. And that will keep them going just fine.
Okay, I'll give that a try. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for your call this morning. You know, it's so interesting. You see all of these products when you go into big box stores mainly. All these different kinds of fertilizers. Fertilizers for your tomatoes. Fertilizers for your Christmas cactus. And all these different kinds. But you've told me in the past that these are just all the same.
They're gimmicky.
So we don't need each one of those on our shelf at home.
You do not. And so fertilizer, houseplant fertilizer, or any fertilizer, the nitrogen in them is going to come from one of 3 or 4 sources. You've got urea, ammonium sulfate, ammonium nitrate, and calcium nitrate are the 4 sources. That's it. And if you have one from company X that costs $18.99 and it says 363 on it, and you have one that cost $8.99 that also has 363, they're the same thing. And now sometimes they can put some other things in there, especially if they're lawn fertilizers, that will make them slow release and maybe release nutrients a little bit more evenly. But triple 16 is triple 16, you know, 16, 16, 16. And just because it has a picture of an orchid on it or a picture of a tomato, generally those fertilizers, it's just marketing. You know, yes, it will work and you're not harming anything. But if you look at the fertilizer analysis on, say, an orchid fertilizer and compare it to a general houseplant fertilizer, they are not really going to be that different.
Yeah, because I only want to have one product. I don't want to have 15 different products on my shelf.
Yes, and so a fertilizer from, say, a liquid houseplant fertilizer from Lily Miller or Miracle-Gro or VPG, one of their products, they're all going to be very similar, especially if you're mixing them into water.
Okay. Let's take a call from Marilyn this morning. Good morning, Marilyn. What was your question this morning?
Hi, I have a question about, I bought tulips in a jar at the store last year, and they died, and I pulled everything out. Can I put tulips in there and with some water and grow it again?
Well, the tulips will need to, if you still had the bulbs, they would need to go into your refrigerator in a big Tupperware-type container with moist potting soil for 8 to 12 weeks. And so you'd put those in September or October. And when you start to see them shooting some roots out, you would plant them in the container. But because tulips require that cold period, it's called a vernalization, just to go get some tulips and drop them in there, it would not work.
I have, they've been out in my shed.
So well, they need the moisture also. And so they can be cold, but if they haven't been put into some moist potting soil in a refrigerator that's simulating them being in the soil, just because they've been in your shed, there's a good chance that they would not grow.
Okay.
Now, if they were starting to form roots, maybe, but you could still bring them in and put them in there, but cold alone doesn't do it. It's cold and moisture.
So right now, if she wants to grow those, they may not bloom right away, but how would she go about getting them?
I would bring them in and I would just get an inexpensive plastic Tupperware with some potting soil, put them in, get the potting soil moist to the point of a wrung out sponge, and let them sit in the fridge for 8 weeks and just check them weekly and carefully look at them. And if she starts to see a little root emerge, they're ready to go into the water.
Perfect.
So that would get you tulips by March. That
would be
great, right?
It would. And they may be getting some vernalization in that shed, but it's just a lot better if they're moist while they're being chilled.
Okay. And do I need to fertilize them?
Initially, no, but they do benefit. If you have them just growing right in water, half-strength Miracle-Gro or something similar will be just fine.
Okay. And what do I start that now?
You would put them in your fridge now, yes.
Yes.
But while they're in your fridge, they don't need any fertilizer in that soil.
And how long do you think it takes for them, once you've planted them, had them in the fridge for 8 weeks, how long do you think it takes for those tulips to grow?
Another month or so before the flowers emerge. And it's going to be an 8 to 12 week period, depending on the particular cultivars you're using. And so you need to keep an eye on them.
But in time for spring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right, Marilyn. Thank you so much for your call this morning.
This is one of those things that sometimes it's just easier to buy them from the garden centers because all this has been
blooming.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be fun to experiment a little bit sometimes too.
She already has the bulbs.
Yes.
She has a container.
Yeah,
I
why
say,
not?
You know, in the middle of winter when we can't go outside and really do any planting, it's a fun thing to do.
It is. And so they can actually do this with paper whites and daffodils because they do not require that cold chill. The paper white will actually be killed, but daffodils, they are hardy, but they don't necessarily need the cold chill. And so you'll often see this done with those flowers.
Right. And right now, paper whites, you can buy them so cheaply in just really small. I saw them at Smith's, you know, like $4 for a little box. It comes with the container and they're going to bloom in a few weeks.
They will.
How long do those usually take?
They'll last.
They last a long time.
They last a long time. But once you put them in that container, usually between 2 and 4 weeks before they're up and flowering.
They are so beautiful, and when I smell them, I'm like, why did I plant these?
Yes.
So I always put them in a place like where I can enjoy the beauty, but
from a distance.
They're not too close to
my
me because they're
brother
kind of
lived in southern Mississippi for several years. I got bored when I was visiting and he was working, and I planted a bunch of them in one of his flower beds and didn't tell him. And he's like, I've got the most beautiful flower coming up, but it stinks.
It does. It's a little bit.
And it's not too bad, but it was just when you get close to them. But.
Yeah. I always put them on the dining room table where we don't hang out as much, but when you come in the front door, you actually see them, and then I'm happy.
They're very beautiful.
They certainly are. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, or you can text us at 57500.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jeff Kaplan from KSL News Radio. You want to receive the latest news, traffic, and weather all in one place? All you have to do is subscribe to the KSL text line. Text the word NEWS to 57500 and you'll get the latest news, traffic, and weather updates. Sometimes before we get them on the air. I'll catch you on the radio weekday afternoons on KSL News Radio.
The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Jerry is, well, wait, before I get to Jerry, I just wanted to tell the person who was listening that said, hey, what flowers were you talking about? The pretty stinky ones. We were talking about paper whites. And one of the reasons we were talking about them is they're really inexpensive and they come really beautifully. You know, you can give them for presents this time of year. And Smith's had them for three something. So, yeah.
Yes, and they're just very easy to grow.
Okay, and when we say they're stinky, you have to be pretty close to them to actually smell that they're stinky. It's not like lilies that put off this, you know, really strong aroma. So if, you know, you put them in a nice spot coming into your house, people won't smell them
unless you go, oh, what beautiful flowers, and then take a sniff.
And then you smell
that
them.
Fragrance comes from the pollinators are trying to attract. And in this case, it's flies. And we don't have those in the winter, so it's not a problem, but it's just part of their biology. But get more than 6 inches away from them and you never smell
They're
it.
They're such an elegant looking
they
plant.
Are.
Anyway, you'll enjoy them. Jerry is on the line in Provo. Good morning, Jerry. What was your question?
Well, good morning. I've got a big bed of strawberries overgrown, and I'm wondering when to, how to thin them out. How do I tell the old ones from the new ones? And when's a good time to transplant the runners or the newer plants?
Well, how long have you had your patch in?
Oh, probably 10 years. Okay. I mean, it's just been coming and going over the years.
Yeah, I would
Last
not.
Last year was really good. Had a lot of moisture, a lot of water.
Oh, yeah.
It just took off.
Yeah, I would not transplant them to new areas just because they have 10 years and they start to get a buildup of diseases and things. And it's just sometimes not a good thing to do with plants that old. But if as long as the current patch is still productive, you take about 25 to 30% of the plants out every year and you just take the biggest, oldest plants out. And it might be that if you can't differentiate too much, if you find plants that are not super productive, those would be ones to come out.
Well, are they? Can you tell by the size of the root that goes into the soil?
By the crown, yes, you can. The bigger the crown. And so if those crowns are 3 or 4 years old, you could get a little hand trowel and just dig those out and leave the younger ones behind.
And can I transplant the younger ones to a new location?
No. Don't do that. Just because they're 10 years old, they get a buildup of diseases in them, and you're just moving those diseases to your new patch. And so just keep your current hatch, is it still productive? But if you want them in a new area, I would really order them online or go to a garden center and get certified virus-free stock and just plant new plants in the new spot.
Yeah, I usually just pick up bare root ones when I do that. I did plant some a couple of years ago that we've done pretty well.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm saying that they're bad, but the risk just increases every year.
Okay, and when's a good month to put those in? In the spring?
In the spring, yeah. You can move them. Just get as much of the root as you can.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Jerry, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, would like some basic care information to keep a potted aloe vera plant alive. They say theirs do okay for about a year, then they start looking terrible and they can't revive them.
These are the aloe that you use for burned skin and things for sunburns and just general burns. And they work well as a houseplant if you have them in a really bright location. They are kind of a Mediterranean deserty plant, and so they like that bright light and they like well-drained potting soil. And so if you overwater them, that will also cause them to die sooner. But I've noticed that they're oftentimes not super long-term houseplants, like 2, 3, 4 years, and they may start to decline. Some of them live far longer, but I've noticed that they do need to be cycled out.
I've noticed, too, that if you put them in a big enough pot, they will form other offshoots.
Little pups.
And then you can take those pups and replant them in another pot.
You can.
And that'll keep your plant kind of going.
It'll keep it going. And so, but yes, that well-drained potting soil, bright light. And you don't want to get them bone dry, but make sure that they dry out between irrigations.
Okay. The next listener is Dina in Davis. Good morning, Dina. What was your question this morning?
Good morning. I don't know. Can you hear me okay? I'm on the road.
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, good. So we have crabgrass that we noticed when the weather got cold. Our whole front yard went brown, and we realized it's all crabgrass now and noticed some on our side road, too. Is there anything we can do during the winter time to get rid of all of that so we can probably replant or do something in the spring?
It does sound like it is crabgrass that when you got your first frost, if it froze out and was dead. And the only other grass that really does that is Bermuda grass, but it's not nearly as common. So have you tried pulling any of it up?
We have in spots, and when it has gone into my flower garden in the front yard, I've pulled it up, but it just kind of creeps and crawls and grows back.
And so when you pull it up, does it come up and you have long strands that are rooted every 6 or 8 inches?
Yes.
Okay, that might be Bermuda grass, and that's a different beast than crabgrass. The seed heads look a little bit similar. They kind of have a crow's foot seed head, but if Bermuda, when you pull it, if it has long strands that are 3 and 4 feet long, that you hear a pop every 6 inches to foot, that's Bermuda. And that one's a lot harder to get rid of. So how to get rid of it is the question, because it can be quite difficult. Now, there are a couple of products available from local garden centers. There's one made by BioAdvanced just called Bermuda Grass Killer, although it's more Bermuda Grass Suppressor, and it takes a couple of years to work. You can use that one on your lawn, and there's another product called Turflon Ester. It's Turflon Ester. And you can use both of these. Turflon Ester maybe spring and late summer, and then the bare Bermuda grass or the BioAdvanced Bermuda grass killer in the summer. And you just spray those monthly, and over time it will suppress it. Now, in your flower beds, you are going to have to do a marvelous job of just keeping it pulled and see if you can get rid of it by attrition. Now, the other thing you can do is carefully spray it with something like Roundup, because Roundup will do a number on it. if you have it in your flower beds. But it will be very, very persistent for 3 or 4 years. But if you use the Bayer, BioAdvanced used to be Bayer, but BioAdvanced Bermuda Grass Killer, which I think J&J Nursery carries, maybe Valley, if you're up in Davis County. And then Turflon Ester, you can pick up from any farm store, places like J&J or Valley in your area too. Pre-emergent will help. When you do a pre-emergent in the spring, do another one midsummer because it will germinate then and just keep after it. But it, a lot of people over time just kind of tolerate it as their lawn. But if you want to go after it, that's how you would do it.
Just really don't do nothing in the winter and start again in the spring.
There is nothing you can do in the winter until it starts to actively grow. And once you get that up and going, you may take it to your extension office. Sheridan is not there, but they should still be doing a Master Gardener clinic. So Jerry Goodspeed, or if you're in the Weber County area at the fairgrounds, Helen Muntz is our horticulturist there, and she does a clinic. And if you can bring in some samples, they could probably tell you very quickly if it is Bermuda.
Okay. It sounds like it. The way you're describing it, it sounds like it.
USU has a fact sheet on Bermuda grass, a couple of them that you could also look at. They're free to download.
Okay. We'll do that. Thank you very much.
All right, Dina. Thanks so much for your call. And again, how would they find, what's the easiest way to find those fact sheets?
Google.
And you would Google?
USU and Bermuda grass.
Thank you, Ton.
You are welcome.
Ton, you're so funny. Okay, next listener wants to know, is Bermuda grass the same as quack grass?
No, although they're like equally as evil. It's just like the two children of Satan.
Oh.
So
you've got, you have fact sheets on quack grass too, I bet.
You do. There is a lot of information on quack grass. Quack grass control is completely different. Although Roundup does do a number on it, it comes back 3 or 4 times once it's been sprayed out. And you may have to use what's called a wicking wand, where you rub it over the leaf tips of the quack grass if it's in your lawn.
Okay. Phone lines are open. You just get kind of snarky with me. Like, when I ask you that question, it's like, you know, when you Google Bermuda grass, you will get just a ton
yes,
of different information.
You can put me in the corner during a commercial
Dunce
break. I will go,
you.
Yes, and I'll stand in the corner during the commercial break. I am sorry.
Okay, phone lines are open. 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We will be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Next listener, Ton, wants to know how to trim a honeysuckle in the spring and still get the fragrant flowers. Words are hard today. I have to enunciate.
Well, the honeysuckle bloom in late spring and early summer.
So you can't really trim them in spring.
Yeah, you want to, what you can do is thin them out. And so when they start to put on new growth, you can see where the leaf buds will be and they're expanding. There likely will be a lot of dead branches in there that you can clean out. And you just cut them every 18 inches. And if you have them in a trellis or a fence, and pull them out. But on the honeysuckle, right when it's done blooming, you would do some limited, you know, this vine here and this vine there, you could do some pruning right after they're done blooming.
But if you start going in there and just wholesale trimming, you're going to not have the flowers.
You are not. You will have a lot of leaf growth and very few flowers.
Honeysuckle are not that fast growing, but I've noticed even with mine, it's become quite a substantial bush.
Yes,
right now.
They can get very big, and there are a couple of vining species that can get massive.
Oh.
And then there are also some bush honeysuckles that are not as commonly planted today as they used to be. But
well,
a lot of
like 30 years old.
Yeah, a lot of older homes have bush honeysuckle also. And then there's also some that look a little like boxwood that are even less common. But the honeysuckle vines are still really common, but the bushes are not really planted anymore.
Well, I can understand that. One problem with the bushes is the roots become so compact, you can't plant anything around them.
You can't.
Because they've kind of taken over the space.
They will take over the space. And they do over time, unless you regularly prune them, they can get ratty looking.
Mm-hmm.
And thin, so that renewal pruning will keep them. But then nationally and even worldwide, the honeysuckles, there's two or three species that have become incredibly invasive in temperate forests. And so they've been banned in much of the United States.
Oh.
Here in the Intermountain West, not so much because we're so dry, but even in our canyons where we get more moisture along streams and things, you will find honeysuckle that has escaped. But in a lot of the country, honeysuckles are just completely banned. Not all species, but the invasives.
So is there a particular, because there are people who love honeysuckle, is there a particular plant that you would say would be best to plant?
Some of the newer ones, there's one called Lemonade that I really like that has pink flowers
Lemonade,
on it.
Okay.
Yes. And so if you needed a vining one, that's one I really like. There are some American wisteria species that are quite spectacular that don't get super huge. There's one, is it Blue Moon, that's really pretty. It's not a honeysuckle, but Blue Moon wisteria is a lot more compact than the Asian wisteria species. That's another one that I really like that would work in situations.
Will they take down a trellis?
Because
some
over
of them
time,
really are.
The Lemonade honeysuckle
strong.
Will still get big. The Blue Moon wisteria will still grow over a trellis, but it just stays about half the size of, say, a Chinese or Japanese wisteria.
They get really strong. They have really
they do.
Thick vines, even more than grapevines. So
yeah, and
I
so
love them. They're so beautiful.
They but are. So the American wisteria, like Blue Moon, is just a little bit more diminutive and a little bit more controlled, but it still has the really fragrant flowers on it.
Okay. Dee is in Midvale. Dee says that, I think this is a woman, I'm not sure, they have ornamental grasses that have taken over their flower bed. They planted them about 9 years ago, and they keep getting bigger. What can they do?
Dig them out.
Can't, how would you split them? Can you split them?
You can. You would have to go in sometime early to mid-March, as soon as you can dig, and excavate around the sides of the grass.
Mm-hmm.
And then dig under it so that you have a good root ball on it. So you'd go 6 inches, maybe a foot underneath if they're big, pull them out of the ground, and they may actually have to use an axe or a sawzall.
They're pretty strong, aren't they?
They are.
They get so compact.
They are, and so you might have to use a sawzall and just sacrifice the blades because of the dirt and things, but you can get a good wood-cutting blade that's a foot long for under $5, and so you might just use a sawzall to split them.
Okay, here's my laziness. Couldn't I just take the sawzall and just cut them right in half and then pull out the half, one half?
If you could get it deep enough, and so you still would have to dig around to be able to split it.
Okay. Like, can't I just do this in a simpler way? Come on. This kind of reminds me of red hot pokers, though. I really love how red hot pokers look when they bloom, but they get so large, it's really hard to separate them out.
It really is. And those red hot pokers get big enough that it's almost like they're going to eat small kittens and puppies if they go too close. They're not that bad, but they are massive.
They get massive. So this past year, might have been the year before now, I actually had to just go through and pull them out, like you said, dig around them, pull them out, and replant them. They didn't bloom this year.
No.
Because of that reason. How long does it usually take something like that to rebloom?
Anywhere from 1 to 3 years.
Oh my gosh.
Peonies can take 3 or 4 years. But red hot poker is a little more aggressive, so you may get some blossoms this year.
But the peony that I transplanted last year may not bloom?
For 3 or 4 years after it's moved.
That is not okay, Todd.
It could be different.
Let me just react to this. I have this one plant that I had to move to make room for the patio. You're telling me this gorgeous peony is not going to bloom for a couple of years.
It won't, most likely.
I'm going to say 2 just to make myself feel better.
It's just that the peonies are a little more sensitive to being moved and split. And so after that happens, it can be sometimes one, but usually 2 or 3 years before they rebloom.
That's not the Christmas wish that I wanted, but okay. How many plants? Are there other spring blooming plants that do that as well, that they just won't rebloom for a few years?
Anytime you move things, iris are another one that are not really notorious, but when you split iris, they oftentimes do not bloom the next year until they get reestablished. That's another really common one.
The roots just get a little bit traumatized and they say, hey, we'll show you.
Yes. And so my mom-in-law has, and I noticed it needs to be cleaned again and they need to be thinned, but the iris will spread, you know, a good 6 inches to a foot a year. Mm-hmm. And when they get too crowded, they stop blooming. And so if you have an iris patch and there's no flowers, they need to be divided. But then after you do that, you usually have a 1 year wait before you get new flowers. To avoid that, oftentimes can dig them as soon as they're done blooming. Mm-hmm. And that gives you the best chance of getting blossoms the next year.
Yeah, and I noticed how they're kind of, those root balls kind of start coming above the surface. Like, they're not underground anymore when they get too massive.
No, and so they're not actually bulbs, but what you would do is you'd take a section of those roots, maybe a rhizome. I need to look that up again.
All right.
But you get a section of the root, and you'll have what's called a fan of leaves on there, and you'll have 4 or 5 leaves in a fan shape coming up off of it, and you clip those back by about a third and just move the entire thing to a new home.
You know, it's so funny. When I was moving those, I actually put some in a pot and I didn't get a chance to plant them. Kept them over the winter in a pot just out in the yard. They were fine, and then I planted them and they were fine.
Yeah. The iris
are
so adaptable.
Pretty hardy. Okay, next listener says, it sounds like ornamental grasses are similar to yucca plants when it comes to growing out of hand and trying to keep them under control.
You never get rid of them.
They want to know, do you have any ideas for keeping them under control, the yuccas?
You need to, if you plant a yucca, and especially if you try to move it or dig it out, every root that's left over forms a new yucca plant.
Wow.
So the only thing I can really recommend is just putting them in an area that you're not going to move them, because it can take, once you start dividing them, once you start moving them around, you actually spread them. And so you may be able to find smaller yucca. There's one, it's not Adam's Needle, that's a regular one, mm-hmm. but there is a yucca utahensis. There is another yucca. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but sometimes nurseries will have Utah native yuccas that only get about 18 inches high and wide.
Okay.
And they're just a little bit more diminutive than the common yucca filamentosa that we usually put in.
Okay. A follow-up on the honeysuckle question. So they say, when do I prune the honeysuckle for the following year? And do these blooms grow on the old or the new wood?
They bloom on one-year-old wood. So you would prune them as soon as they're done blooming the best chance of getting flowers the next year. Otherwise, you may just have to wait a year.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Phone lines are open. You can call us at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.